parenting on Moncrief, thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
1890 453 106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter, or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. It's time for our parenting slot. Of course, Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon.
First question, bit of a grim one.
Yeah.
It's a two-part question. The person says, firstly, should I tell my children that their grandfather took his own life back in 1980 by shooting himself with a shotgun? The children are aged 17, 15 and 12. They currently think he died from a heart attack. Obviously, it was a trauma for all of us. We were all similar ages when it happened. I'm not sure if I should ever tell them. Secondly, should I tell my children of the many mistakes I made as a young person of 15 on up into my 30s on drugs, hash and cocaine? I never actually got my life together until I was in my mid-30s. I regret it all now, as I'm very ambitious and think I could have achieved more earlier if I hadn't taken the really long, dangerous route. I would like them to avoid the pitfalls I made. None of them are difficult teenagers. They're all very good youngsters, so I'm lucky in that respect.
Wow.
Okay, well, there's a lot there.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I mean, the line that really jumps out at me, first of all, is I'm not sure if I should tell them. I would be saying be sure, because once you tell them, you can't untell them.
Yeah.
It's out there. So be sure about it. I'd also be wondering why the drive to divulge so much right now. Has something happened? Has something triggered? Is there something else going on that has brought this? Well, I better fess up with the children and tell them all of these truths. I would say the children were obviously not born when granddad died, and there seems to be an inference in this question that, you know, the trauma that the person writing in experienced at the same age about this, and then going down a path of drugs and taking a while to get their life back on track.
I wonder if those things are related to each
other. Are
they
related? Yeah. That'd be a question I'd have as well. So I suppose, I mean, the answer is yes, in one way. Developmentally, those children could withstand, process and hear that information. But be very clear about why is it you want to tell them, and do you really want to hit them with all of this all at once? I'd also say, if you are going to go ahead and you do think some more about this and say, look, I do want them to know the truth, is it something that the rest of your family also, their children know the truth? You know, because you don't want one family knowing one thing and one family sticking with the heart attack story. It's better that everyone's on the same page. If you could couch this in, I suppose, what I'd call like a teaching moment, you know, if you want to talk about the risks of drug culture, or, you know, are drugs something that are coming across your kids' path or friends of theirs, if you could couch it insofar as I'm telling you this story because it's part of a bigger discussion about drugs and I'm sharing this about my life with you. And the same about granddad's true passing. If you want to couch that in a discussion about mental health and suicide, and, you know, in the 80s, things were very different to how they are now in terms of how people spoke about things, and it wasn't a deliberate lie, it was a protection. You know, if you wanted to discuss it in those contexts, I think that would probably have some benefit in it. But I would come back to the first point about be really sure that you want to open this before you do, because once it's out there, it's out there.
Yeah. The thing is, though, I suppose on an instinctive level, probably people listening would always say secrets in a family are a bad idea.
Totally, but they're there toxic at the moment.
Yeah.
And so when you're going to unsecret them, and that's what I mean, those children could withstand the truth. I mean, they are children who are old enough to hear and process that. But be really clear about how, why and when you're bringing it up. Like, what is the purpose? What is the motivating or trigger factor to bring it up now? Just in case there is something else going on in the background that is actually triggering this. Just be really clear in your own head, and then do sit down and be open and honest and invite the discussion in the broader context of suicide, mental health, drug culture.
Because it sounds like 17, 15 and 12. So, you know, they're getting towards their, you know, being grown up. They can probably, for the most part, make fairly sensible decisions about drug and alcohol abuse anyway.
Absolutely. And it's a discussion parents either are already having or should be having with that age children anyway. It's about how you do it.
Yeah. I just wonder, does the parent, you're right, there's something there, perhaps the parent feels a need to disburden.
That's the piece that's just jarring with me. And I think a little bit more reflection on why and why now. But, you know, if that was addressed and dealt with and the parent says, no, I feel really clear that this is a good time to do it, then yes, developmentally, those children could have that conversation with you.
Yeah. Plus also, might there be a worry that if the parent tells them about all the stuff they did,
you're inadvertently giving some permission.
Yeah.
And you're fine, and look how things turned out.
Yeah.
That's why you need to build that into your conversation, Sean, to be honest. Like, you need to be saying, and I don't want you thinking just because I've turned out fine that that makes it fine. These were big mistakes. They were dangerous. I regret it. So be really clear about it.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear actually what other parents do about that, because it's probably all... I'm assuming it's a norm that most parents don't tell their kids what they did.
Absolutely not. Parents do revisionist history on when they're talking about these topics all the time. Like, you know, when did you start drinking? Oh, I kept my pledge till I was 18 and, you know, I didn't touch a drop till I was legally old enough. People talk like that. It depends on what your teaching moment is. But you can share degrees of truth.
Or your lying moment.
You can share degrees of truth once it fits within the developmental context of your child and the nature of the conversation you're having, the purpose of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's not an easy one.
No.
My 10-year-old daughter reverts to talking in a baby voice for days on end. She's very smart and funny and is generally quite mature for her age. We're not sure if she's aware that she's doing it, but I'm guessing it's for our benefit. What can we do or should we do just to let, or should we just let it play itself out?
Yeah, I mean, the days on end piece, I was curious, does she mean non-stop for days on end, or are there periods of the day that this is more prevalent? Because that could be interesting to track. Is there a pattern to when she reverts to this baby voice? Is it around bedtime? Is it after a prolonged separation, you know, when she's been at school or childcare and parents have been away, and on that point of reunification, is she regressing to a baby voice, perhaps seeking some nurture and more connection? So I would actually ask her about it. Because this person says, we're not sure if she's aware that she's doing it, but I'm guessing. I'd ask her, you know, I notice you're using a baby voice. What is that about? Is it nice to think about being a baby? I'd also be interested, has anything happened in the family? Like, has there been a new baby, even a baby cousin? Even if the baby isn't in your immediate family, if she is seeing or exposed to a baby and seeing, oh, look at all the attention babies get and look at the way adults interact with babies. I'd quite like that. That could be useful to do as well. I think as well, though, 10-year-olds are at a developmental shift. You know, they're coming out of young childhood. They're preparing to go into that pre-adolescent phase. Many of them are already in it at that age. So there is that bit of pulling back to push forward. So mild to moderate regression in behaviour and emotional behaviours in particular are not that unusual. It's what we do with it. So I would put a boundary and a limit on it and say, I notice you're using this voice and I want you to know it is okay, but we're only going to use it in the house with you and mum and dad or whoever's at home, and put a boundary limit that way. I would ask her about it, as I said. I'd track a pattern myself. How long is it going on for, when and where, times of the day? Is it her way of seeking out more nurture-based connection? If so, increase the cuddles, the kisses, even more so than you already would. And then I think I would suggest something to her, like, let's do something together this week that is actually age appropriate. Take her out for something, an outing, a walk, a hike, or whatever you want to do. Go trampolining or whatever she's into, pottery painting, whatever it is, and spend some one-to-one time with her and just see, is that what she's craving at the moment? And reverting to a baby stage as a means, because babies are all consuming, all absorbing, and get all of their needs met by adults in charge.
Yeah.
We expect a lot from our 10-year-olds, and mostly they can do it, and then sometimes they just need a little bit more babying themselves.
Isn't it, you know, we kind of assume that kids kind of develop in a straight line, and once they've stopped being nine, they're never going to go back to being
exactly
nine. But it seems
to
be kind of a back and forth thing.
Of course
thing.
It is.
Yeah.
And I mean, that goes on. It's when they need us. And also, there could be anything going on. You know, even in school, if she's had a new teacher, if there's been a change, if there's something going on with friends, any of those events can trigger an emotional temporary instability, and children will regress developmentally. It's very normal. It's not to pathologize it. There's no big fear or worry here, but just keep an eye on it. And as I said, do put a boundary on it that it is okay, but it's okay in this setting, because you don't want her doing it other places and maybe inviting some challenges from other kids, and that's going to create a whole other layer of difficulty.
I have a nearly 3-year-old and he has never been a good sleeper. Over the last few months, he's waking at night and screaming as if his life is about to end. The scream is so loud that the whole house, which includes his two younger siblings, are all woken up. The other night I went up to his room and he was screaming upon touching his privates. It was as if this was scaring him. We've tried talking to him about this to no avail. It is continuing to occur every night. We're at our wit's end with lack of sleep. Any advice would be really welcomed.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose reading this one, the screaming that he wakes at night for a few months as well, that it's going on that long. What came to my mind, Sean, was night terrors. That
yeah.
when people talk about kids freaking out in the middle of the night or freaking out in their sleep, it's really a different way of describing a night terror. And a night terror is quite different to a nightmare. A nightmare is something like we all experience at various times, particularly if there's stress or anything going on. Night terrors typically are most prevalent in early childhood, I'd say around the age 2.5 to 6. And this child would be bang on that kind of age for that to occur. They generally disappear then, you know, just disappear. That's it. They don't come back. For some people, they linger to just before puberty. And for others, they may have recurrence in adulthood, usually triggered by stress or some life event in that case. But a night terror is something the person experiencing it has no control over. A nightmare happens. So you're in the middle of your sleep. You have a nightmare. You wake and you are conscious. You are cognizant. You can talk about the dream you've just had. A night terror typically happens in the first third of your sleep. So the first few hours of your sleep, you wake, it's sensation based, feeling based rather than anything cognitive or memory. So you're not going to be able to wake up and say, what happened? Tell me what happened. He won't be able to do that. You're better off asking him, does he have a feeling? What's the feeling? And stick with that with him. Unfortunately, with night terrors, there is little and inconsistent research about what to do with them. One of the techniques that has proven somewhat successful, and certainly they could try, is you let your child go to sleep, like fully asleep, fast asleep, and then you wake them within 3 to 5 minutes of them having gone to sleep. Now, I mean fully awake, wet face cloth in the face, wide awake. And then you resettle them. And in that sleeping, waking and re-sleeping, it tricks the brain into thinking you've been asleep and woken up, and it can reset that night terror piece. Now, again, it's something to try. It does work with some children. It doesn't with others. It depends on how desperate you get. I mean, really, it's down to if it is a night terror, and it is most common at the age he's at, that's really down to a glitch in what would usually for most people be a smooth transition between the phases of sleep. And for whatever reason, for this child, they are not smooth. And that's what's causing him to wake screaming. The other thing that jumped out at me was that she inferred that he was screaming, touching his privates as if they were scaring him, or as if it was scaring him. So I think I'd pay a visit to the GP and just rule out
A physical cause.
Is he in pain? Because certainly a young child woken in pain will scream. I'm a fan of ruling out the physical first. So I would be paying the GP a visit with that. And then other things that you could do. I mean, you say you've tried talking to him to no avail. I mean, he's 3 years old. He's not going to be able to talk to you about this. So abandon that. You could get a little bottle of water with a couple of drops of lavender oil and spray it as a special sleep spray that gets any bad feelings away when you go to bed, and spray it around his bed for him. You could do some placebo things like that and they might help. But for me, my first thing would be go to the GP and track the pattern of this. Could this be a night terror? If it was to persist and escalate and there were concerns, I think, you know, go and see a psychologist who might be able to help with the night terror side of things. But there are little, you know, there's a huge amount, not a huge amount of research about night terrors in young children, unfortunately.
Yeah. Though in many cases they do grow out of them.
Oh, at 2.5 to 6 is quite typical, and then they disappear.
Yeah.
For some children, they won't even last that long, and they certainly wouldn't be every night. You know, they come in, you know, up and down, up and down, but it can go on for a few years.
Yeah, we've had a few texts from people actually saying, for instance, this one, don't laugh. See if the screaming kid has pinworms. They come out at night. Mine scream like mad. I thought it was nightmares for 2 nights.
Okay.
But again, that's going back to checking
the physical. Go to the GP, absolutely.
On the subject, on that first question we had about the grandfather committed suicide, the grandkids don't know. And the person who wrote into us was wondering, is it now time to tell them? One texter says, our family's full of secrets. In my experience, various different cousins know varying degrees of things. And when they come out, either accidentally or intentionally, they are explosive. Anything that you would like to control, as the reaction would be, it is better to frame it the way you're most comfortable letting your children know. Someone else says, I don't think that mum should tell the kids about her past use of drugs. If she's in a better place, then leave well alone. Moira says, I told my kids at 13 and 16 about their granddad's suicide because I was afraid someone else would say it to them. Yeah. They were fine. Bit of a shock. But having never met him, I guess, was a bonus. Also, do your kids a favour and don't tell them about your mistakes. They don't need to know. Anyway, we do have to take a break after that. A four-year-old with a bit of an attitude. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Joanna Fortune is still with us for our parenting slot. Another text that says, have to back up the worm suggestion. This is for the three-year-old that isn't sleeping. My daughter was waking up crying for a week. Couldn't work it out. She mentioned something about cramps. My wife said it could be worms and that a dose wouldn't hurt. Night sleep returned. It might well be, but
yeah,
you know,
go to the GP.
Go to GP. Yeah. Well, especially if you woke up actually holding
exactly
his genitals, it might have been more his stomach that he was holding. Ah, the poor little fella. Anyway, I'm at my wit's end with my 4-year-old girl who was so hard to manage lately. She has this attitude all the time with both me and her father. Whenever we ask her to do anything, she will call us names, shout, throw temper tantrums, and is constantly just really cheeky. She's gone from being a lovely little girl to a brat at times, and it's doing my head in because I don't know how to handle this behaviour. We've tried everything from time out so she can cool down, ignoring her, giving out, etc. Nothing makes any difference. I dread coming home in the evenings from work to her because I know I'm facing into hours of bold behaviour. Is this normal for her age? Will she grow out of it? And should we just ignore it? She's in play school and gets on great there. It's only at home with us or her grandparents that this behaviour comes out. Any suggestions would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, I mean, the question, is this normal for her age? Yes, is the answer. You know, it is. It's quite normal. You're saying that it's happening, you know, so hard to manage lately. So has anything changed at home? At her age, I'd be wondering, has she started Montessori or longer days in creche or Montessori? Is that having an effect on her mood? Mm. Is she tired, overstimulated, exhausted when she comes home? She is at an age to start exerting her independence. Around 4 is when children really have that whole cause and effect thing nailed now. So they test out everything. If I do this, what will you do? Are you really in charge or am I in charge? Are there areas of this that I can be in charge in? Let me test that out. They're in that test and see phase, and that's quite normal. I mean, often at this stage, this kind of behaviour, you know, while it's very difficult to parent and deal with, I don't want to minimise that. It is more, I would say, an expression of how frustrating it is to be a small child in a big world, because at this age, they really want to feel independent. But of course, there are times then they are utterly helpless and dependent. Yeah. So that's very frustrating. And at 4, you don't have that emotional language to express that articulately. So you use your language, which is behaviour, to convey, I'm not feeling okay. Things are not going my way. So I'm going to make you go my way. You're going to do what I say. And really what she's looking for is calm, clear, consistent structure. She wants to see and experience that there are adults who are safe, in charge, and will take care of the big things for her, so she doesn't have to. Now, don't get me wrong, she's not going to high five you and thank you for putting boundaries in place, but it will actually help her to do so. Another thing, and often with children this age, is to catch them a little off guard. If they do, because they're testing out, as I said, that cause and effect, if they do something that they know is, you know, naughty behaviour or behavioural transgression, they anticipate that you're going to give out, or as this person says, I've tried everything, timeouts, ignoring her, giving out. You want to pick one thing and stick with it consistently, but they're testing it out. I'm going to say get creative. So when it happens, if she's calling you names, as you say there, don't give out, but reflect that name calling is unkind and it hurts your feelings and it makes you feel badly, and ask her to say what she's saying in a nicer way. And also put on some music when you all get in home. Everyone's coming in from their day. This is a parent saying, I dread come home because I'm anticipating what's going to happen. If you're anticipating she's going to act out, she won't let you down. She will give you what you're expecting. Yeah. So put the music on and everybody dance away their moodies of the day. Everybody gets to dance out the bad feelings. Do it for 10, 15 minutes. It'll just get the adrenaline up. It'll get the, you know, good hormones surging in the body. And it's also something she won't have expected you to do. So you have caught her off guard, and when you catch them off guard, you're winning. So I would try that. I'd also try doing things like telling stories where the children or the animals in the stories are learning a lesson about rude behavior not being acceptable and good behavior, and keep telling her that so that she's learning a lesson without even realizing she's doing it. But you're doing it at that degree of separation. And just give her more time. I think she's probably going to need more time to connect, especially if you've been separated, you're coming in from work. That's a prolonged separation for a four-year-old. See if you can do a couple of fun things the minute you get in. Dump bags, kick off shoes, throw on your runners and get out into the garden for even 10 minutes. Yeah. Kick a ball around, play, and then come back in. Often that's enough to just give them that reconnection. The point of reunification is where the emotional charge is. So you want to make that as positive as possible. But yeah, get creative. Dance away the moodies. Everybody put the music on.
Is it significant at all that she seems to be doing it with the grandparents as well?
Well, I suppose I inferred that, unless they're providing childcare until parents get home,
I don't know that now.
If they are her other attachment figures, children will often act out with the people who are most reliable in their lives.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to love me even if I act like a nightmare. You know, you're still going to, you'll be cross with me, but you'll still love me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to chance that in school with the teacher because I want them to think nicely of me. But I'm okay to hit you with it because you're my safe people. So if grandparents are the other attachment figures in the situation, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. A few adults texting in saying, I don't have kids. I'm going to implement dancing away the moodies
yes,
in my household
should.
Tonight.
Yeah.
My 11-month-old son is terrified of the Hoover and hairdryer. Anything that makes a loud noise, really. Will he grow out of this? And if so, at what age? The house is a mess and it won't let me clean.
I read this and I went, oh, secondary gain. Put the Hoover away. Yeah. I mean, look, not to make light of it because that is actually very challenging for somebody. But 11 months. Just to kind of flag, at 11 months old, the nervous system is so immature that it means that lots of children that age can't cope with certain kinds of sensory input.
Mm.
And it's not because they have a sensory issue or a sensory problem or a sensory processing disorder. I don't want anyone's mind running down that track at 11 months old. It's far, far too young to look at that. But what we do know is that the nervous system is still very immature. So certain noises are unacceptable. Couple of things you could do. It is the hairdryer as well, but they're quite similar noises in my mind anyway, the Hoover and the hairdryer.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was all kinds of noises, then you'd have to look at, is this an auditory overstimulation? But for me, those two would fit in the same thing. I said, yes, he will very likely outgrow it. But in the interim, what can you do is the question. So you could talk to him while you are hoovering. Personalize the Hoover. You know, Henry the Hoover with a little face on it. Get some stickers and decorate whatever Hoover you have and personalize the Hoover. Give it a character. Talk about it. Make up a story. But also talk to your child while you're doing it so that your voice, say anything. It doesn't really matter what, once it's in a soothing tone. Also have them help you. Give him a little brush, a little dustpan that he can follow you round and be a part of the activity. Put him on your hip while you're doing it. Not the most comfortable. You will have to take frequent breaks, especially if he's a sizable 11-month-old. But hold him while you're doing it will also help him feel safe that this isn't threatening to do it. With the hair dryer, I think I would take out a teddy and try blow drying Teddy's hair and show the child that it's not a dangerous thing, that the teddy is fine, everything is safe. And the other one I would suggest and probably emphasize is, why don't you sit on the floor with him while your partner does the hoovering? So that one of you is in the room sitting right beside the little boy, playing with him, keeping him engaged, using touch to reassure him, to ground him while the other one's doing the hoovering, and you normalize it that way until he gets used to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've mentioned this in show before. Our Baba was terrified of the Hoover maybe about a year ago. But we had one of those Henry the Hoover things.
Yes.
So she was kind of fascinated with it as well.
Because it has the face.
Because it has the face. And she knew what cupboard it would be in. And she'd go and visit it when it was off.
Really
she'd
good
open
idea.
The door and have a look at it. Like it was like her first pet.
Yeah.
Except she ran away when you turned the thing on. But now she doesn't pay any attention to it at
it's
all.
They have to get used to it. But it is about the maturing nervous system.
Yeah.
So just be patient. I do think if you can do the hoovering when there's another person around and so that the child has someone to sit with. That would be helpful.
But I do remember
Or just don't Hoover.
Yeah. I remember other people texting in saying that their, you know, their toddlers would sit on the back of the Hoover and ride it
Hoover.
Around the place.
Yeah.
Sounds great. I'm really worried about my 8-year-old's mental health. He's developing a serious anxiety about something happening to me or his dad. He gets images in his head that keep appearing and he's finding it difficult to stop them. He describes it as the world he's looking at, going into a tunnel that's slightly blurry and then a monster thing, but indefinable, comes down and tries to destroy everything. He says he's most worried about it taking over him and making him crazy. He said it started last Thursday morning when he wasn't well with a temperature, and I think it's getting worse, but it definitely stems from worrying about something happening to his dad or me. He tries to stop the thought or the image by flicking his head or rolling his eyes and telling himself off, but he says it's getting harder to stop. It appears when he's not thinking about it and doing something else, and it immediately causes a physical response of panic. It sounds really horrible and it's slightly triggering my own anxiety. More than slightly, I would have thought. Because I'm worrying about him not being in control of being able to make him better. I'm worried about it happening at school. He's been off since Thursday with the virus, as he can only handle the images when he's with me. It only started last week, but his worries about something happening to us started a couple of months ago. Have you any suggestions?
Yeah. Ooh, okay. I mean, there's a lot there, and I'm sure she's or he's highly anxious about what's going on. The temperature being a trigger, that kind of interested me in case, you know, if it was a very high temperature, had the child imagined seeing something while in that temperature state? You know, that can happen, a little hallucination, or seeing a shadow or a blob that now has taken on a life because they keep ruminating on it and thinking about it. So it's not going on that long. That's not to minimize it. That's a good thing. Also, I highly commend this parent. They have gotten a huge amount of detail about what this child is experiencing out of the child. So this child clearly is able to speak about how they're thinking and feeling, is able to very well express and detail what's going on for an 8-year-old. So I think that's a positive, and keep him talking would be my message there. Keep talking to him about it, but also keep talking to him in a way that you don't allow this permeate the whole day or the whole family. You want to be interested and know that, let him know that he can come to you. Maybe even at certain times of the day. We're going to talk about it straight after school, or we're going to, because he will go back to school after the virus, or we're going to talk about it before bed, or whatever time you decide. But other than that, you're going to do other things, because if he's getting the secondary gain here, you're going to get a huge amount of attention and engagement for that. So you don't want to let it take over, because it will get bigger. So just put a boundary on that. I would be promoting, you know, as I'm reading that you are, you know, connection, engagement games. Engagement games for me are things that are about, you have to look at each other. There's eye contact, there's touch involved, but they're fun.
Yeah,
it's not about the problem. You're actually playing. It could be something as simple as playing a game of mirrors. So if this person sits opposite their child at the child's level and they've eye contact, then you do a sequence of moves and the child must copy everything you do. So they're taking their lead from you. They're mirroring you. Then you can get creative with that and do big jumps, get bigger, get smaller. You can even do eye signals where you keep your head straight, but move your eyes to the right. The child must jump to the right, move your, you know, get him engaged with you and taking your lead. That can actually be really helpful for children when they're experiencing high anxiety symptoms like this. And do some relaxation, some breathing. If there's child yoga, a children's yoga class available to you, do that. But I'm also going to suggest in this situation that if this didn't resolve in the next, if it went beyond 10 days, 2 weeks, I would be seeking professional support, and I would be contacting a child psychotherapist or a child psychologist and seeking a consultation.
Joanna, thanks for coming into us today. Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break. Back in a couple of minutes with the man who saved at least 10,000 Jews.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. Fiverriversfostering.ie.